Forget about yard signs. Meyer's name is on every sign at every highway exit and, you know, in every neighborhood in this district and throughout the Midwest.
I mean, who would want to run against somebody with that kind of name recognition? And not just that, but also a service record from the Iraq War and a multi-billion dollar family fortune? A civil rights attorney in West Michigan has stepped up, and she's making this a real race. It's one of the true battlegrounds in Michigan this year. This is the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. Michigan's 3rd Congressional District, which includes Grand Rapids, is the state's only open seat this election cycle. The seat's currently held by Libertarian Justin Amash, who, as you may remember, caused a huge stir when he left the Republican Party last year.
Well, I was hoping to set an example for people. I've been involved in party politics for a while, and I believe very strongly that it's hurting our country at this point. And I think people need to stand up for what's right, stand up for what they believe in, and be independent of these party loyalties that really divide us.
It became clear that Amash would have a hard time holding on to his seat as an independent or a libertarian when he'd also lost the favor of one of his most important and moneyed supporters, the DeVos family. Now, the 3rd District is considered one to watch on election night as Grand Rapids grows a more progressive or, at minimum, a more centrist voter base. West Michigan reporter Dustin Dwyer is keeping track of the candidates for Michigan Radio, and he's been watching the hurdles the two have to face in winning over the district. Hey, Dustin.
Hey, April.
For starters, could you remind us how this seat opened up in the first place?
Well, yeah, as you said, this is the seat where Justin Amash is the congressman for now. He's been the congressman since 2010. And he's always been an interesting character in Michigan politics from even back in the day when he was in Lansing in the state legislature. He has always sort of gone his own way. And in the era of Donald Trump's Republican Party, Justin Amash had been a frequent critic of Donald Trump. And in fact, at one point, it was reported he said he didn't even vote for Donald Trump in 2016, went against him even as a Republican, finally called for Donald Trump's impeachment, and then left the party last summer. And Amash, it sort of took him a while to announce that he wasn't running for re-election. The order of events was that Amash actually explored a presidential run as libertarian and announced that he was going to explore it and got a slick new website and a new photo on his Twitter bio. And then he said after looking at that, he decided, actually, I'm not going to run for president. I don't see a way that a libertarian can win. Given everything that's happening with the pandemic, I couldn't really break through, he said. And while that all was happening, he basically just missed the filing deadline to run for re-election as a libertarian in the seat. And when that deadline passed, he just sort of put out a tweet, yep, it's been a pleasure to serve this seat. I'm not running for re-election.
Wow. So who does that leave us with as the two major party candidates in the third?
So the two major party candidates are Hillary Skolton. She's running as the Democrat. She is a first-time candidate in Grand Rapids and anywhere else. And Peter Meyer, who's also a first-time candidate, and he's running as a Republican. Meyer got through a primary campaign against several Republicans who were vying for the seat. Skolton went, for the most part, unchallenged. There were a few Democrats who got in the race early on, but they never really matched her in terms of funding. And by the primary, they had dropped out.
Hillary Skolton has worked on some pretty interesting and high-profile civil rights cases in Grand Rapids, but I don't know if that outweighs the massive name recognition that Peter Meyer enjoys as part of the Meyer family, the grocery store Meyer family. How important is name recognition in this race?
Well, yeah, Peter Meyer's name is really, I mean, forget about yard signs. Meyer's name is on every sign at every highway exit and, you know, in every neighborhood in this district and throughout the Midwest. So he has no problem getting his name out there. Hillary Skolton, her family's from West Michigan. There are people who know her throughout town and who know that name. But yeah, it's not the Meyer name at all. And I think, you know, name recognition is always important in any race. But I think when you're talking about a down ballot race, I mean, there's just going to be a lot of people who really haven't heard much about this race really at all. And so having a recognizable name that people go, oh, well, I don't know much about the 3rd Congressional District, but I know that name, that will make a difference.
You know, I just thought the Republican primary for the 3rd was so interesting. In a lot of other Republican pockets in the state, candidates run pretty far to the right, but this was one in which the candidates were running toward the center. Can you tell us more about how that worked out?
The 3rd District, what's now the 3rd District, historically it had been the 5th District. This area, the area around Grand Rapids that includes Kent County, it's always been Republican for many, many years. I mean, the district's been held by Republicans since 1974, since the 1974 election, last time a Democrat won. But the Republicans who have held it have always been these moderate Republicans. I mean, Gerald Ford being the most famous one. He was well respected in the House. He was considered a moderate Republican. That's part of why Richard Nixon picked him to be his vice president, which then led to Gerald Ford becoming president. But even after Gerald Ford, names like Paul Henry, Vern Ehlers, who served right before Justin Amash, Ehlers was known for being someone who crossed the aisle quite a lot and caucused with the most moderate Republicans. Peter Meyer has really talked about that in his campaigning.
We wanted to do something a little different in our campaign, right? We wanted to make this, you know, in the spirit of Jerry Ford, in the spirit of Paul Henry, in the spirit of Vern Ehlers.
He says, I want to be a Republican like Vern Ehlers, like Paul Henry. I want to serve the people of West Michigan and as a sort of moderate Republican.
Focusing on the community, because I think way too often everything gets nationalized. Everything in our politics becomes binary. And I'm a firm believer that the conservative values that we share, you know, belief in the principles of limited government, of economic freedom, of individual liberty, you know, you look at everything that's strong in this country, and those are the values that underpin them.
And that's, I think, why you see people campaigning on that, because that history is there.
So now that we're past the primaries and into the general, would you say that Peter Meyer and Hillary Scolton are aiming at the middle?
With a lot of their communications, it sure seems that way. Hillary Scolton has emphasized her faith quite a lot throughout the campaign. It was her first ad.
It's on all of
her flyers.
My faith is what calls me to serve, what led me to the Department of Justice and back home to West Michigan. In Congress, I'll defend Michigan jobs.
Legitimately, she's a person of faith. She's a Christian who grew up in West Michigan. That's important to a lot of voters here. It's clearly important to Hillary Scolton. Even as a Democrat, she's making that a key part of her campaign. They do both seem to be trying to communicate to, you know, to similar voters, voters who maybe were conservative, maybe have been conservative, but who are not necessarily happy with where Donald Trump has taken the party. I mean, the 3rd District, Donald Trump won the district in 2016, but in Kent County, he won with the fewest number of votes of any Republican candidate in Kent County since the 1990s, going back all the way to Bob Dole. So even though Trump was victorious in the county, he wasn't exactly exciting voters. And a lot of voters actually peeled off to the Libertarian Party. And one of them was a guy I talked to. His name's Jim Spicer. Jim Spicer, he called himself a lifelong Republican, but he ultimately voted against Donald Trump. He ultimately voted for the Libertarian candidate. He lives in Grand Rapids. But even though he voted Libertarian in 2016, even though he doesn't like Donald Trump, Jim Spicer told me he is going to vote for Peter Meyer.
He is kind of a personal responsibility candidate. And that's, I think that there needs to be more of that. He's not a nanny state kind of candidate. He's not a, the government will take care of you, don't worry about it candidate.
There's plenty to talk about in 2020. What kinds of issues are Meyer and Scolton talking about with Election Day just around the corner?
They're both releasing ads in the last week of the campaign talking about health care. Hillary Scolton has said a number of times health care is the number one issue that people ask her about when she's in the grocery store, and keeping healthcare affordable. So she's been emphasizing that and really trying to drive it as a point of difference between her and Meyer. She says that, so Peter Meyer signed a pledge early on in the campaign saying he would overturn Obamacare if elected. He would help to try to overturn Obamacare. Hillary Scolton has used that as an opening to say he would take away the protections for people with pre-existing conditions, because without Obamacare, those protections wouldn't be in place. Peter Meyer comes back and says, no, hold on, wait a minute. I support protecting people with pre-existing conditions. I wouldn't eliminate that. And so that's something that I support. But they've sort of driven those things between them. Both are sort of fighting over that. Peter Meyer's latest ad says she's lying about that, that he will protect people with pre-existing conditions. So that's the thing that they seem to be fighting about most. That's the thing that they seem to be focusing on most.
Dustin, like you said, this district has leaned Republican for so long. And yet, I saw late last week the Cook Political Report decided to rate this as a toss-up district, and it's getting a lot of attention outside of the state because of that. Do you think this is really a toss-up race?
The polls seem to suggest it is, and the Cook Political Report says it leans Republican toss-up. If you look at 538, it favors Meyer slightly. But I think it's going to be really hard to predict the outcome of this race because I think it could very well be close. But the other thing is that there are a ton of new voters in Kent County specifically, and most of the votes for this district come from Kent County. So there's been a ton of work in the past 2 years to register tens of thousands of new voters in Kent County. How those voters will vote, whether they'll even vote in the congressional race, could have a huge impact on this race. So I've been talking to some people. I talked to someone who lives in Grand Rapids and who works on the south side of town, works in communities, particularly in the Black community, talks to a lot of voters there. This is a place where many of those new voters, many people who may not have voted before, many people who may not have been registered before, are coming from. His name is Javin Hay, and he told me that one thing he's interested in this race is whether either of the candidates, Skolton or Meyer, are really speaking to people on that side of town. And here's what he said.
People might end up not voting. Like, you know what I mean? I think there's like a lot of attention on the presidential debate. And I feel like if they aren't able to connect for real on their level, then they're going to be overlooked and people are not going to vote for them.
So I should say that Hay actually lives on the same side of town as Hillary Skolton. This is her neighborhood when he was talking to me. And I've seen her out campaigning this neighborhood. She certainly would say that she's trying to reach out to these voters. But at least at the time that I was speaking to Hay, a lot of people hadn't heard of her yet. So one of the big questions, you know, in this closely contested race is, you know, people are motivated to vote in the presidential race. Will they continue down the ballot and vote for these other candidates, even if they're not familiar with their name?
Yeah, lest we forget, one of the big political moments in Grand Rapids this year was the Black Lives Matter protest. And I think a lot of people who don't live in the area were surprised to see the marches were as big as they were. Can we go back to Justin Amash for just a minute, Dustin, before we wrap this up? Do you think he would still be running for this seat if he felt he had a real chance?
Oh, man, trying to read the mind of Justin Amash is, it's not a thing that can be done. You know, Justin Amash, he occupied sort of a singular space in American politics as a libertarian, someone who had leaned libertarian his whole career, who just would not bend on certain issues, on certain principles to get along. And so that put him in a tough spot in this party, and I think put him in a tough spot in the district. I think the truth is there are a lot of people, a lot of voters who are just like Justin Amash, particularly in this district, people who were traditionally conservative, but who now are pretty fed up with the party and lean more libertarian. Justin Amash is not alone in that. But whether a person could be reelected with that happening in a three-way race, if he was a libertarian against a Democrat and a Republican, it would have been an uphill battle. It would have been a difficult race. And it seems he just chose not to run in it.
Michigan Radio's Dustin Dwyer coming to us from Grand Rapids. Dustin, thank you.
Thanks, April.
Coming up, a moderate Republican in West Michigan faces his most serious election challenge in years. We're going to dig into Michigan's 6th district, where demographic change makes for a November hotspot.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
There's a congressman in Michigan who starts nearly every conversation with, Call me Fred.
Call me Fred on the thing if you can.
Thank you for being with us, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it's Fred Al.
All
How
right,
are you?
Fred, thank you.
Thank you.
Fred,
for
it's always Fred.
Fred. Fred, it's good to see you.
Fred Upton, the neighborly congressman, has survived more than a dozen election cycles to hold on to the 6th Congressional District and the southwest part of the state for 34 years. He represents Kalamazoo all the way out to Lake Michigan, down to the border with Indiana. In recent years, Fred Upton has been viewed as a centrist Republican, one who publicly challenges President Trump and often engages in bipartisan messaging with Democratic colleagues. Being more centered than his right-leaning party behooves him as he represents a district that's slowly become more liberal over time. It's also presented an opportunity for Democrats who have long felt that Fred Upton's seat is vulnerable. Lindsay Moore is a reporter with the Kalamazoo Gazette who has been writing about this year's congressional race in the 6th. Lindsay, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
So Fred Upton's challenger this year is Democratic State Representative John Hoadley. For those who may not know him from his work in the legislature, can you tell us a little bit about him?
Sure. So he is term limited, hence why he's kind of moving up and looking to unseat Upton this year. Some of Hoadley's big campaign pillars are clean water, health care. Hoadley initially kind of went into his state house race a couple of years ago because his partner was diagnosed with MS, so really motivated him and has been a big part of his story all along is those prescription drug prices.
Look, this is personal to me. This is my home. And I want to say after 34 years in Congress, with some of the best health care under the American taxpayer's dime, Mr. Upton voted to limit access to health care over 60 times. My partner's medication would cost $7,200 a month if we didn't have health insurance.
So along with that, he's one of our openly gay members and would be, if he won, the first openly gay member of Congress in Michigan. And so that's also a big part of his platform.
2018 was a big election year for Democrats. They were able to narrow the margin between Fred Upton and the nominee, the Democratic nominee in that race, but they didn't win. What would Democrats have to do differently to change that outcome this year?
That's kind of the big question right now. I was actually just speaking with a Western Michigan University political science professor talking about that, because even Upton's track record, you know, he is kind of the Goliath in this district by far, and there's been a lot of Davids. But I think one big difference here is that early voter turnout, and it's going to really come down to that in terms of will we see the quote-unquote blue wave coming down from the presidential campaign? Will that have enough momentum that, you know, Democrats historically benefit from that because they're more likely to vote straight ticket? And so if Hoadley can ride that blue wave, he's a good contender.
Lindsay, is it clear to you that Fred Upton is feeling the heat? I mean, he's worked so long on constituent services, building his relationships with Debbie Dingell and other folks across the aisle. Does the campaign seem like they're taking this year's challenge seriously?
I think it's fair to say they're taking it seriously. I don't want to speak for them to say that they're shaking in their boots, per se. I was just going through some campaign finance, and they still have Hoadley's campaign beat by $500,000 overall. I will say that Hoadley's campaign is heating up, especially financially. In this last quarter, they raised over $1 million, which is more than Upton's campaign has ever done in a single quarter. So I think there is momentum there, and I think that Upton takes him seriously as a challenger. Their debates, you know, are civil, and they go back and forth, and it feels like a fair fight.
Fred Upton has been vocal and publicly critical of President Trump. But as they've sparred in the debates and in ads, does he have a record that is that he can run on as being different from the Republican Party line?
Yeah, so Fred Upton does really like to advocate himself as being bipartisan. In almost every answer, he'll talk about reaching across the aisle and working with the Problem Solvers Caucus. 538 does a great job of tracking those votes, though, and they have him at almost 95% agreeing with policies that President Trump supports. So that's a big one for the Hoadley campaign to kind of throw right back at him and talk specifically about the record.
Yeah. I'm sure this is complicated in a year when there have been so many watershed events. Fred Upton has said this year that he supports Black Lives Matter. I imagine there can't be that many Republicans who are saying that right now, since it has been a polarizing issue among some Republicans and Democrats. How does his more moderate messaging play with Republicans in the district?
That's a good question. I'll speak to what I know on that. So you're right that Fred does openly say Black Lives Matter. And in the most recent debate, he was pretty strong in saying that we can't debate racism, but rather dismantle it.
We should acknowledge and dismantle it. Black lives indeed matter. I joined a number of peaceful protests, particularly after the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, across our district. And as a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus, I was part of a working group that really seeks reform.
And so he talks a bit about that with police reform measures. I don't know that I want to speak for other Republicans on whether or not they agree with Fred. I would agree with you that not all Republicans are coming out and saying Black Lives Matter in the same way or kind of dancing around it with different messaging. But I think Fred saw the writing on the wall on that one, that if he was going to compete with Hoadley, who is more progressive and who says it, you know, without batting an eye, that he needed to catch up on that mm-hmm. on that platform.
Are there things that John Hoadley is saying that might find some resonance in a year when many people in Western Michigan are facing economic hardship?
For sure, with the conversation around coronavirus and the economic impact of that, one of the debate questions on the last TV debate was, you know, what will we do for the economy? And Hoadley's answer immediately was, well, we need to kind of fix the virus before we fix the economy.
We all agree that there should be support for our small businesses. One area, though, that we may have some disagreement on is, are we going to put the pieces in place that let consumers have the confidence to be going back to work? I mean, going back to our restaurants to eat, going back to spend in our local businesses. And that only happens when we have a plan to deal with COVID-19.
So he's, you know, really set on how do we get a stimulus package that goes more directly to teachers, for example, or to first responders. That being said, you know, Hoadley and Upton agree a lot on that stuff, which is hard sometimes for the undecided voter, that if they're both kind of promoting that stimulus package or promoting getting back on the feet or promoting small business, who do you choose? And so I think that's why this race is kind of a tough one for moderates.
You know, just as Fred Upton has had to show his cards on issues like Black Lives Matter that might matter to center-leaning left voters, I imagine John Hoadley has had to address some issues that more conservative voters in the sixth might have had. What have you heard him saying that might set him apart a little bit from other Democrats running this year?
That's interesting because, I think both of these candidates do lean to the center and play to that as a competitive advantage. I think the stickiest issue that Hoadley's gotten himself into in terms of left versus right is the police reform and defunding the police. So Republicans at large and Upton himself have kind of gone after Hoadley about his vote on a House bill that discouraged local government from defending or abolishing the police.
I'd like him to tell us why he voted no on a bill entitled to discourage local units of government from defunding or abolishing their local police departments. Discourage local units of government from defunding or abolishing their local police departments.
I want to be really specific with that verbiage because it wasn't a budget bill, but it was discouraging local government from defunding the police. And Hoadley was one of the minority votes in that to say, no, we should not discourage local government. And so he's had to not necessarily backtrack, but continually explain that that's what the vote was for and that it's not an outright defunding, although Fred's ads have, you know, pointedly said, you said, let's defund the police. So that's been a big one that they're going head to head on and trying to kind of parse those words to fit the box of either left or right.
Lindsay, this has been such a bruising political year. I mean, the competition for that top of the ticket race is just so bare knuckles and brutal. And I almost wonder, hearing what you say about both candidates in this race, really trying to court the middle, would you say that centrism is in and of itself something that that voters have said that they have said that they want in Western Michigan right now? They may be divided with their neighbors and with their own families even.
Certainly, yeah. I think that's fair. I think that a split ticket is going to be more common among voters, certainly among voters that are taking the time to really educate themselves. I think that's a big plus out of all of this, is that we've seen a lot of people be really interested in those Vote 411 questionnaires that MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette have helped put out. And more than anything, I think the mail-in ballot also gives time for people to really think about who they want regardless of party. I think bipartisanship has come up a number of times for a reason, because there's an appetite for it.
Lindsay Moore is a reporter with the Kalamazoo Gazette. Lindsay, thanks so much for your work, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
We'll put some links to Lindsay and Dustin's work on the 6th and 3rd District on today's show notes. Check them out. And that's today's podcast. I'm April Baer. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's show was produced by Mercedes Mejia, with help from Jen Guerra and Rachel Ishikawa. Music by Blue Dot. The stateside theme was composed by 14KT. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.